Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and thank you for the organizers to invite me to this very historic institution. Today I just want to talk about mineral beneficiation, because in most cases, even our major minerals or our major commodities, such as iron ore, they are being beneficiated to some extent nowadays. So it's becoming more and more important, and therefore, you know, this is an essential part of the recovery of our natural resources. If we look at the world population growth, you can see there are three scenarios. I'm just going to take the middle scenario, and basically what it says is that the world in 2050 will be inhabited by 9 million people. That's the middle scenario. And main population growth, as you can see, are mainly in Africa and also in Asia. If we look at the GDP growth in 2015, and that's from a Price Waterhouse publication, we see that the GDP in the world is going to be dominated by three countries: China, the US, and India. I've not taken the liberty to group all the EU members together, but there you can see that those three countries are really going to dominate the world economy in terms of minerals. And also, China will definitely dominate mineral demand in the foreseeable future. So, let's look at the sustainability. And minerals extraction is inherently unsustainable because it exploits a dwindling resource. And eventually, most of our major deposits will be developed. Also, it is environmentally hazardous or unacceptable because open cast mining sterilizes large tracts of land, especially coal mining, iron ore mining, and acid mine drainage is a result of that, and often remediation is neglected. And mining is also inherently dangerous, especially underground mining, and also especially in less developed areas. And we hear of that from time to time in the news. And these issues need to be addressed by responsible actions, both from industry and government. I'm stating very broad statements here, but it's true for most developed countries and not also for others. So when we talk about sustainability, I think we need to have a short-term vision. And let's take 2050. And we see here from a US publication that in 10 to 25 years, some commodities will not be adequate anymore. And in 25 to 50 years, another one, set of metals. One can agree with that or not agree with that, but certainly some things are clear. Mineral consumption has been growing faster than population growth, and energy availability, as we heard yesterday, is going to constrain mineral exploitation. And we have contradictions in the public at large, which was certainly highlighted this morning, that downstream industry, you can have a very glamorous image. Mining and processing usually is considered to be dirty and dangerous. Also, downstream industry has a very nice green image, and you can see the image of, rightly so, of mining and processing. That is a vanadium calcine dump in an urban area. Also, there are certain contradictions in terms of downstream industry versus the mining industry. Mining industry is a high-risk occupation or high-risk area. And you can see an example there of the disastrous fall of the iron price from 2011 to today. It fell from about $180 a ton to today, I think it's $60 a ton. So there's a huge risk in terms of profitability. When one looks at the economic importance for iron ore on the left-hand side, you can see in the blue the importance of the iron ore price to the total cost of steel production in the middle and to the total cost of a downstream application. In the case of production, the cost of steel production, you have about a 6 to 20% component of the ore price. In the case of downstream industry, it's less than 1%. So whether the price of iron ore is 60 or 180, it does not make any difference to the downstream cost. That's the conclusion that I can make from that. Also, another contradiction is that extraction is a long-term commitment. So development of a major mineral asset can often take more than 10 years. A good example is Voisey's Bay in Canada. I think it took more than 20 years to get to production. In that case, you have the commitment of the mining company for developing this mine. However, the commodity price can collapse. You can have production disruptions, strikes and disturbances, electricity supply, water supply, California droughts, for instance. You can have licensing changes or legislation changes, and this often happens as the value of the resource gets higher and higher through exploration. The demands on the company gets higher and higher as well. So let's dispense with the broader aspects of mineral exploration and let's go to the heart of it. And that is the need for process optimization. In the case of platinum group metals, we see that the total supply and total supply in US dollars is $14 billion. The recovery from the ore is usually about 75 to 85%. So there is an opportunity of 25 to 15% increase in revenue. So if you have 1% increase in revenue by optimization or better reagent choice or better milling practice or whatever, that translates to $140 million per year, 1% recovery. And this comes with very little extra cost because the plant is already operating, it's already producing. So any incremental increase is pure profit. You also see here the different stages in the extraction of platinum group elements. You have the mining, you have milling and flotation, smelting and converting, base metal refining, which means the removal of nickel and copper, and then precious metal refining, where you get the pure precious metals, such as platinum, palladium, rhodium, etc. What I highlighted here, in terms of the total cost, mining is by far the predominant contributor to cost. In terms of revenue, milling and flotation is by far the biggest contributor to an increase in recovery. So if one wants to look at decrease in cost, you would concentrate on mining. If one would concentrate on increase in revenue, you would concentrate on milling and flotation and not on the other downstream processes. And you can see here also, and this is taken from the Lonmin 2010 production report, it says there that underground and overall concentrated recoveries increased to 85 from about 80%. So it's a 5% increase in recovery just by optimization. And that certainly is very worthwhile. What I want to quickly go through is some of the opportunities that still are present in our industry. First one is iron ore mine waste utilization. Usually an iron ore is beneficiated to at least 60 to 65% iron. The rest is discarded. And it could be a grade of 59 or 58% iron, which is no longer acceptable. So there's a huge opportunity here for increase the grade of the discard tailings to an acceptable grade. So there's really a good incentive for dry processing, novel upgrading technologies in iron ore. The second one is tailings reprocessing. From the platinum group element industry, there's a lot of tailings present, tailings containing chromite, it's a so-called UG2 chromite, and also tailings containing still residual amounts of platinum group elements. Now, there is a strong economic incentive to look at tailings reprocessing. The mining cost is negligible because this stuff is already on the surface. The comminution or grinding cost is greatly reduced because the stuff is already minus 100 microns, And you can now start looking at ultra-fine milling to liberate any locked platinum group minerals. Of course, reduced manpower, and you still get about 50% recovery after the primary recovery. And also, you can get a hold of this secondary chromite. Now, this chromite is actually, and I'll come to that a little bit later, very sought after. And then you can dispose the waste in abandoned mine workings. So we need to look at research into reprocessing of tailings in all commodities. Another one is sintering and pelletizing. Because of the fact that increasing amount of fine-grained iron ore, fine-grained manganese ore is produced, they need to be agglomerated because you cannot use a fine powder in a blast furnace. It inhibits the upward movement of gas, CO gas, which is necessary for pre-reduction. So you need an agglomeration technology, and the two main technologies are sintering and pelletizing. And there's been a lot of work on producing superior materials in terms of strength and reducibility. It's much more reducible, for instance, than pure iron ore. And for instance, the Minas Rio deposit in Brazil, the iron ore deposit, pumps its very fine flotation concentrate about 600 kilometers to the sea. There it needs to be agglomerated. So there's a need for that. There's another one, processing of titaniferous magnetite. And here, quite a huge resource is lying essentially undeveloped. And they contain not only iron, but also titanium and vanadium. And this material cannot be used in blast furnaces because it forms an unsuitable high titanium slag. So it's at present pre-reduced and electrically treated in electric arc furnace, which is energy intensive and expensive. But the presence of vanadium can render this process economic. And this is what is presently produced in South Africa. However, the company is finally under management at the moment. But this is an example of a vanadium-rich slag containing about 25% in a shaking ladle, which is where the steel is the liquid steel is tapped and then oxidized in a shaking ladle. And this is the present production, apart from also alkaline treatment and leaching. But there is a great need to use this material in an optimal sense to recover not only iron, but also titanium and vanadium. Vanadium content can be up to 2% in the ore. And there are huge resources available. The other one that I think needs quite a bit of research still is laterite nickel. It constitutes 60, some people say 70% of known nickel reserves. And nickel is principally used in stainless steel. So stainless steel is growing 4 to 6% per year. So therefore, there will always be a need for higher and higher quantities of nickel. And sulfide deposits are essentially known and exploited, and they can be easily upgraded. They can be easily upgraded by flotation, and therefore you could easily treat them by various metallurgical methods, the upgraded concentrate. However, laterite nickel, there is no known way of concentrating the nickel in the laterites. So therefore, you need to smelt this material as is. You can see the grades, 1.8% at Sorowako, Koniambo, 2.6%. And in Australia, leaching was another opportunity, but most of these mines, indicated in red, are no longer operating. So therefore, there is a need to really look at the production of nickel from these laterites. You have two kinds, a limonitic type and a silicate type. Also, the smelting of this material is somewhat problematic and critically dependent on the type of ore. So there's a big necessity to really have a good knowledge base of the ore, especially the magnesium to silica ratio, because you need to operate in that top valley, liquidus valley, in the diagram to be able to smelt the material, because on either side of that valley, the liquidus temperature increases dramatically. So you need to be pinpointing your composition of your ore. And Cerro Matoso in Bolivia really makes a big effort to make sure that their ores are suitable and in the right have the right composition. So there are two grades that are produced, but the main problem is the slag to metal ratio. You expend a lot of electrical energy to heat up 80% of your material, no, 98% of your material, to get 2% metal, nickel metal. Let's say 5% nickel metal. So therefore, you spend a lot of energy heating up the material, cooling it down, and throwing away to be able to recover this 2% nickel product. So it is a energy-intensive production, and therefore Chinese have developed a low-cost alternative, and that's the so-called nickel pig iron, which is now I think the next low-cost option that you have in producing nickel or ferronickel. It involves sintering and then smelting in a mini blast furnace. So it's a cheap technology, not electricity, not dependent on electricity. So we are looking forward to more developments in this area, but I think there's a lot of opportunity here. But also, in trying to upgrade your ore, if one can get a 2 times increase in the grade, and let's say a 50% recovery, you can reduce your slag to metal ratio to half that. You can increase your production. You can double your production just by looking at upgrading of laterites. So I think this is a tremendous opportunity. It's a difficult one, but I think surface chemistry might help us in that regard. Gordon? The next one is titanium processing. And titanium is an enigma. It's a superior metal. It's mainly used in aerospace applications. And it's the fourth most abundant metal on this planet. However, the production of titanium is only 200,000 tons as compared to aluminium, 47 million tons. Stainless steel, 42 million tons. So, although titanium is so superior in terms of strength, in terms of strength to weight ratio, and also in terms of its corrosion resistance, because all those silicate nickel leaching plants use titanium as the containment vessel to contain superheated sulfuric concentrated sulfuric acid at 250 degrees with a pressure of 44 bars. They have to contain this. If it's not titanium, it's not possible. So it is really a superior metal. But the problem is that we're still using the so-called Kroll process, where we produce titanium tetrachloride and reduce that by magnesium, forming titanium metal plus magnesium chloride. Then you have to separate it and separate the magnesium chloride from this spongy titanium metal, and then it has to be remelted in a vacuum arc furnace or a electroslag furnace. So it's a major, complex, costly process to produce this. And people have been looking at how can we get a viable alternative to the Kroll process. And it was investigated by US Department of Energy 10 years ago. And the so-called Cambridge process was hailed as a highly promising new method of producing titanium. And a lot of money was sunk in it, but as at present, no titanium is produced by this metal. All titanium is still used, produced by the Kroll process. And I think here, major opportunities are still exist, and I know many organizations are still investigating. Probably the most promising one is the so-called Tyro process of the CSIRO in Australia, where they have this, they're trying to make this process continuous and producing below the melting point of titanium magnesium chloride, a fluidized reduction of the titanium tetrachloride. Then that's treated further, but it's a continuous process. How am I doing? 5 minutes. So there's a lot of research opportunities in this area. And if one takes, for instance, the amount of money spent on weapons research in the US, for instance, probably other countries as well. I mean, you know, it certainly is worthwhile looking at this as a major opportunity, because titanium is fantastic. Then with regard to reuse and reprocessing, waste slags are produced by the steel and ferroalloy industries. For instance, blast furnace slags are valuable cement additives, and they're almost fully utilized. We are looking at new technologies for the utilization of ferromanganese slag, which still contains a lot of manganese, to recover the manganese and use the residue as a cement additive, because the residue contains gypsum and microsilica, which is quite valuable for cement. There's another effort in processing of titanium steelmaking slag from our vanadium industry to recover residual titanium. That slag contains about 30% titanium and about 0.5% of vanadium. So we have a research program in that area. And of course, reprocessing of autocatalysts is ongoing in all our platinum smelters. They receive used autocatalysts from all over the world, smelt them in their furnaces, and then pay it on a toll basis. And of course, reprocessing of electronic waste. We've heard about that yesterday. When we look at social aspects, and here I just want to highlight some of the effects, not so much in a developing country, but certainly in mining-dependent countries and developing countries, you have, like in the Californian gold rush, we have a rush wherever a mine is established. Doesn't matter where in Africa, for instance. Because of the unemployment, there's a huge migration of population to these mines. And as you can see, each miner, for instance, in South Africa, supports 5 to 10 family members financially. So it's a hugely important social aspect that needs to be considered when one is considering mechanization. And it's also contributing to an influx of illegal immigrants from other African states. Mining is often a major source of tax revenue, and that makes countries also vulnerable to commodity price volatility. Also, uncontrolled migration affects social cohesion. You have problems with service delivery of water, provision of housing, schools, and also, a third factor is the consideration of the rights of indigenous people. That becomes more and more and more important, and this was mentioned in the previous talk. The rights of individual people are becoming very critical. And again, I want to stress, for instance, give the example of Voisey's Bay, and also we've heard about blood diamonds. So we need to ensure a continued supply of raw materials. We've got to develop innovative technologies, and we need to minimize the impact of mining. And we can talk a lot about that. And we can contribute as a mining industry to the economic development of zero waste technologies, and ilmenite smelting is an example of that. And then also, we need to improve the image of the mining industry. And that's it. Acknowledgements to these people, and thank you very much.